Copcast, episode 142, Sunday, September 27th, 2009.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
110's in pursuit.
2357, 1020, 110.
Welcome to Copcast, a weekly podcast where we discuss cop and tech issues. I'm Rich Shoemaker, and I'm coming to you from the Digital Command Center, located in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. And I want to thank you for taking your time to download and listen to this week's show. Of course, remember, we'd like to extend an invitation to all of our legion of listeners. If you have a decent microphone, all you have to do is install Instant Messenger, that's AOL Instant Messenger, and I'll give you the opportunity to join me as a co-host for a week. If you want to give it a try, just drop me a line at talkback@copcast.net, and you can be just like Michael, a part-time co-host. It's a lot of fun. Give it a try. Well, my Copcast correspondents and I have worked really hard this week to try to put together another fantastic show. But before we get started, how about we take a look in the mailbag and see if anybody finally decided to write to me before we head off to the roll call room for briefing. Well, this week, Michael actually did write, but he didn't write to me. He said, "Rich, I meant to write this a week ago, so I have to apologize for being late. I wanted to say thank you to Clifton Smith for replying to Copcast after I asked about the police explorers the last time I was on the show with you. He had written in explaining how he is, among other things, a police explorer, and I hadn't a clue what that was. So thank you, Clifton, for taking the time to explain that and for helping me understand how our job is done in other parts of the world. It's very much appreciated." And of course, you probably remember Michael is from Great Britain, so we all get a chance to get educated when we interact like that. So thanks a lot, Clifton. Thanks for the initial comment, and thanks again for educating Michael. John also dropped us a line to say, "First off, I want to say I love the show and I'm a very avid listener. I love how some of the world's dumbest people wind up dealing with officers. I have dealt with it too many times where you find drugs in a person's pants and the first words are, 'It ain't mine.' I swear to God, if I had a dime for every time I heard that, well, I would still be broke, but I could pay for that Dunkin' Donut at the end of the day. Keep plugging away with the great shows." Well, thank you, John, for taking your time to write in and tell us about how much you like the show. Remember, we like to hear from all of our listeners, so if you have a comment, a suggestion, or in particular a good cop story, send us an email at talkback@copcast.net. Well, again, this week I was able to get together with our very own two girls from Utah to get their perspective on last week's show. And as usual, you know, we never know exactly what they're going to say or what they have on their mind. But they picked their two favorite shows from last week, so let's give them a listen. And he don't know. I dug my key into the side of this pretty little souped-up four-wheel drive. Carved my name into his leather seats. I took a Louisville slugger to both headlights. Well, again this week, we're pleased to have our very own two girls from Utah back. And last week's show had so much good fodder in it for discussion. It was really, really tough, I think, for them to pick their favorite this week. But ladies, welcome to the show again this week.
Hi, Rich.
Hello, Rich.
So what's shaking down up in Utah?
Oh, well, here at the ranch, we picked up six more hens and a pair of turkeys, as male and female turkeys. So, the West Side Aviary, as we put it, our home for feathered friends, or wayward feathered friends, is now officially open.
So tell me, you call this the ranch now. How many acres do you have?
0.98.
It's kind of a small ranch.
Not quite
an acre. Squeezing all this shit inside your backyard.
I would, yeah. I'd say acres, but you know, we're like 2 inches short of an acre, so okay. And it's the gutter.
Well, Shell, what's happened on the other side of town?
Oh, not a whole hell of a lot. Just
a lot of rain. I can see a
lot of Susie.
Yeah, I watched a few thunderstorms blow over her house and was glad I was on this end of town. Let me tell you.
Well, I'm still praying. I put down my $100 worth of grass seed here the other day, and that calls for instant drought as soon as I seed something. Everything stopped. Well, let's get started here.
Okay.
It looks like Shell has the first story up. You said that you were interested in story number 6, which had to do with the fellow who thought for some reason it was be a good idea to go to a police station to impersonate a police officer. What do you think about that?
I don't know about you, but I read a little further on this story, and this guy is a doozy. He has been arrested 5 times for posing for a cop.
Oh, really?
He's a handful.
Do you realize he drove a stolen vehicle?
He sounds like someone related to me.
He stole a rental car and then parks it. What does he park? He parks it in the district captain's spot.
Oh yeah, I didn't see that.
he's just brilliant. Okay. He
is just brilliant. He's related to my ex-husband. I know he is, okay? He's got to be in that line right there.
Well, I was kind of curious where the unlawful use of a computer and all that stuff came in, too.
Probably sat in some Facebook account or something in the office.
Getting on my face.
Stroll all over inside that place. Finally, he found opening up lockers inside the girls' locker room. He walks in. Half tired and police stuff. I think he had a pair of pants that was police issued.
Yeah.
And he had a gun belt and no gun.
How long was he in there? Holy crap.
It was 1:00 in the morning on a Tuesday, so it wouldn't have been, you know, a real hot night in the Philly PD there.
You think so? In Philadelphia? Wait a minute.
That's why he was going through the lockers. I don't know, the guy was amazing. I was like, wow. He's a dude.
Yeah.
And you gotta see what he looks like.
One at a time, girls, one at a time.
He gets the jacket.
I wanted poster.
Where did you get all this information at?
Google?
Google. Oh, okay. You make Google? Oh my God.
I think I'm going to make you my new story background investigator or something like that, because you get a hell of a lot more information than we got.
She's a Google maniac.
Well, speaking of maniacs, there she was just shopping for her groceries when all of a sudden she has a seizure of sorts.
Tell me she wasn't in the vegetable aisle, please.
Basically, what happened was we had a housewife who decided to go shopping wearing her Ann Summers vibrating passion pants, which includes an integrated 2.5-inch vibrator.
And listen to this. Oh, my God, we have specs.
And apparently it made her faint. And this all took place in Wells.
All you had in the shopping cart was strawberries, whipped cream, and scented candles. She was so ready for a perfect night.
It's all about the foreplay, isn't it? God.
Well, the thing that got me was, how would you like to be the paramedics who arrived on the scene, and they were the ones that detected the still buzzing panties.
And had to turn them off.
Yeah. Remove them and turn them off. And they did return them to her in a plastic bag.
That was very kind of them.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. God.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have got some, we've already got some good stories in, and some of our CopCast correspondents haven't sent some of their stuff in for this week, but, we'd be really hard-pressed to beat the stories from last week.
Oh, I am telling you. I was rolling. I was crying. My poor grandkids were coming up going, are you okay? Yeah, honey, I'm fine. Go ahead. to play.
Well, you know, I know it's early in Utah, but here in the Old Dominion, it's getting a little bit late for us old people.
Yeah, for old people, it's past 9 o'clock.
No, for the old people, they have to get up and work day shift tomorrow. So we're going to wrap this thing up, and I want to thank the girls for stopping by and giving us their look on last week's show and their opinion on which is the best. All right. Okay. Talk to you later, girls.
Bye.
Take care. Hey, where do you turn this damn thing off at?
That's going to be good at the end of it. Where do you turn this damn thing off at?
Hey, I apologize for the audio quality on that particular clip. We were playing around with little tweaks on Skype, and got a little echo in that one. But I want to thank the two girls from Utah for taking their time to stop by and talk with us again this week. Remember, you can catch up with Shell and Suze, the two girls from Utah, on Cops Online at copsonline.com. Just look for Hell's Bunny and Buckethead in the chat room. Well, it's about time to move into the briefing room to talk about all those offbeat stories that our legion of listeners have come to love, and they can't hear anywhere else but right here on Copcast. Item number one. The mayor of a small South Carolina town says she banned her police officers from chasing suspects on foot after an officer was hurt running after a man. Wilford Mayor Sally Peake said she issued the order in August after the city had to pay for an officer who missed work after chasing, quote, a guy with a piece of crack on him, unquote. She said a drug possession charge was not worth the cost to the taxpayers. But her written order said she, quote, did not want anyone chasing any suspects whatsoever. The decision came after two town-issued cars were totaled within a month, although her order applies to foot chases. When a local TV reporter asked her about the policy, Peake would not answer and clasp her hands in a mock praise that the reporter had found a story. Since this is a podcast, I normally don't recommend that you watch a video, but you just have to see the Honorable Mayor in action to really fully appreciate her. So what I'm going to do is put the link to the full reporter's interview in the show notes. I'm sure you'll enjoy. Item two. To get booted off the street, a cop usually has to do something pretty serious, like shoot a suspect or be accused of brutality. But in the Philadelphia PD's 35th District, apparently, a hairdo will do it for you. A cop who got cornrows was ordered off the street and kept on desk duty for 2 days until he cut off his braids. While dozens of black officers across the city wear cornrows, Officer Thomas Strain is white. So when the 5-year veteran showed up for work on September 3rd with a traditionally black hairstyle, it didn't take long for his colleagues, or his bosses, to notice. An officer who asked to remain anonymous said, quote, they pulled him out of roll call and took him right up to the inspector's office, unquote. Strain declined to comment when he was contacted about the hair hubbub. One officer said, it's absolutely discriminatory. Strain's cornrows were neat. It was above the collar. It wasn't like he shaved a Nazi sign or something anti-black or anti-Hispanic on his head. It was just cornrows. I don't know what the problem is. The problem, police spokesman Lieutenant Frank Benor said, is that Strain's superior didn't feel his cornrows were professional. Ordering Strain to chop them off had nothing to do with discrimination, added Benor, who spoke with Inspector Aaron Horn about the incident. Horn, who oversees the North Police Division, which includes the 35th District, is the supervisor who directed Strain to banish the braids. I don't know. It sounds a little discriminatory to me, but, you know, what the hell do I know? Item number three. A Woodstock, Illinois man, charged with drunk driving, rode his motorbike into court. Not to it. Carl Arians, 36, said he rode his Razor MX-500 to prove to the judge that it was a toy, not a motor vehicle. The bike runs on a 12-volt battery, and Aarons said it goes about 4 miles an hour. Aarons was arrested sitting on the bike across the street from his house and charged with drunk driving, as well as operating an uninsured motor vehicle and driving without registration, among other charges. Despite the demonstration, the judge ruled that the bike was indeed a motor vehicle and suspended Aaron's license for 6 months. His attorney offered a valuable piece of legal advice when he said, "You can get a DUI in a Barbie car, so be careful what you do at any backyard parties." Really? Who plays in Barbie cars at their drunken parties? Item 4. To fully appreciate this next story, you have to be a long-time Copcast listener. We got on a kick a while back where it seemed like every week we had some story about an emu. Copcast correspondent Steve Nelson, or should I say senior Copcast correspondent, because he's been around for a long time, is trying to stir up that mess again. He sent us this story. Officers had to use a stun gun and handcuffs to capture an emu running loose on Interstate 20 in central Mississippi. Police officer Kylie Culpepper said that motorists had been calling 911 since Friday to report sightings of the two emus on I-20 near U.S. Highway 80. Authorities had been unable to find the animals until Sunday when one was spotted near the I-20 entrance ramp. The big bird was dodging traffic. Culpepper and deputies were able to surround the animal, but had to use the taser and handcuffs to finally get it off the road. After being captured, the animal was taken to the Scott County Forest Coliseum. And there you have it. If you ever wondered, can an emu tase? It does. Item 5. A skunk that got its head stuck in a pasta sauce jar owes a debt of gratitude to a Buffalo Grove, Illinois police officer. Police Corporal Anthony Goldstein said that it took the cop about 30 minutes, but the healthy-looking animal was freed and it scooted off into the woods. Goldstein said the police were summoned at about 9:06 p.m. on Friday by a man at the apartment complex who noticed a distraught skunk moving around with its head in a jar. Goldstein said the complainant was concerned that the animal was running out of air. The officer patiently turned the jar and maneuvered the skunk's head to free the animal, similar to how you would, you know, remove a tight ring from your finger. He said the skunk didn't spray the cop during the rescue effort. Oh, that's nice. At one point during the incident, police at headquarters began searching the internet for tips on how to best get a skunk out of a jar. It wasn't long after, though, that police went online that the skunk was freed. Police initially believed the skunk's head was trapped in a mayonnaise jar. However, it turned out the skunk had plunged its head into a jar that once contained creamy Alfredo sauce. Now, why that was important, I don't have the foggiest notion. Item number 6. Authorities say a 91-year-old South Florida man jumped out of bed naked and held an intruder at gunpoint until deputies arrived. The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office said Robert E. Thompson woke up Saturday morning after a would-be burglar climbed into his backyard and over his fence and was met by his charging dog, Rhett, a Rottweiler and Doberman Pinscher mix. Boy, you talk about a nightmare. Thompson heard the commotion, grabbed his .38 revolver, and phoned police without ever getting dressed. Deputies said Thompson fired a warning shot as 26-year-old Jose Pascal started to come toward him. Thompson kept his gun trained on Pascal until the deputies arrived. Pascal was booked at the Palm Beach County Jail on a burglary charge, and I guess he didn't have an attorney yet, but why that's important is irrelevant also. I guess he picked the wrong dude to mess with. Item 7. Out of Charleston, South Carolina, not West Virginia, an 18-year-old man and his cousin pulled into a drive-thru at the McDonald's on Savannah Highway for a couple of chicken sandwiches. Instead of their sandwiches, they found bags of marijuana and a loaded handgun. Kathy Riviera, whose son found the gun in her bag, said, quote, "It was the gun and the marijuana that was inside the brown bag sitting inside a McDonald's bag. They noticed they had three bags and there were only two people in the car, so they opened it up, and that's when he noticed the gun and the dope." Police say the gun and the bags of marijuana apparently were meant for the car behind the young man's vehicle in the drive-thru. Those people followed the young man all the way to the gas station on down the road. One of them jumped out of the car and demanded that he give them the bags. He did just that. His mama said, He just passed it off to him because he didn't want nothing to do with that. The teen was so scared that he waited until the next day to tell his mom what happened. No one was hurt, even though the gun was loaded, and police haven't made any arrests in the case. So that's kind of a cute one, and kind of tells you how they're trafficking drugs in that area, doesn't it? Item number 8. This one's a little bit embarrassing. Polk County, Florida drug investigators raided the home of 43-year-old Michael DeFalco near Lakeland, Florida. DeFalco has an extensive arrest record. He's done time in a state pen for drug trafficking. And on this day, members of a multi-jurisdictional drug task force claim they discovered drugs, weapons, and stolen property. However, they missed the security camera that later showed the detectives also discovered a fun video game to play, Wii Bowling. And over the course of the next 9 hours, the game was on. One detective bowled frame after frame after frame. I guess practice makes perfect. The video from the camera showed that while one female detective lifted a couch looking for drugs, another detective focused on pin action. Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd calls the display embarrassing. How do you explain it? Well, you can't explain that. My deputies know that they shouldn't have been playing Wii while they were involved in that search warrant. Detectives from the sheriff's office and several other police departments all participated in a raid, which was caught on the camera. Judd says it was the supervisors who were at fault. He said, that doesn't please me. What pleases me less is the supervision that didn't say turn the television off. Instead of ordering the video game and the television turned off, the supervisor from Lakeland PD joined the fun. Defense attorney Rick Escobar watched a sampling of the drug raid video. He said, I've never seen anything like this. I find this very offensive, shocking. I'm sure that the department is extremely embarrassed by this behavior. Wow, could we have one of those rare defense attorneys who actually has morals? Nah, it sounds more like an act to me. Records show 16 detectives spent 9 hours searching DeFalco's property. The cost to the taxpayers was $4,000. Escobar thinks that this will not look good to the public. He said, all the citizens are thinking, wait a minute, we're paying these guys to go out and protect us, and here they are playing bowling on our time? The sheriff argues there's always downtime during searches, so no tax dollars were wasted. He said the nature of a search warrant is hurry up and wait. Am I trying to defend the fact that they were bowling? Not at all. That was inappropriate. The sheriff claims he launched an internal administrative investigation and will await a final report before he decides if anyone will face discipline. He said it's an embarrassment to the detectives involved, and it's an embarrassment to the organization. But you know what? We employ 1,800 people, and not one of them is perfect, and we all make mistakes. They made a mistake. I kind of like that attitude. Item number 9. A man and a woman accused of training the woman's 12-year-old daughter as a sexual dominatrix in Missouri and prostituting her online are going to prison. The 37-year-old man and the girl's 47-year-old mother pleaded guilty Thursday to sex trafficking of a child. Officials said the two lived in a Kansas City suburb, and the man began having sex with the girl in 2000 when she was 12, showing her how to perform sex acts with men, including bondage and sadomasochism. By the time the girl was 14, the couple had billed her as Mistress Alicia and rented her out to fulfill sadomasochistic fantasies of anyone willing to pay. She was prostituted mainly through a website from January 2002 to February 2005. The couple was ordered to forfeit the $80,000 that the girl earned for them during that time. The man will serve 25 years in the federal pen, while the girl's mother, who isn't being named to protect the daughter's identity, will serve 15 years under a plea deal. Prosecutors said she is the first person in the United States to be charged with federal trafficking in a case involving her own child. The judge and prosecutors agreed on the sentences after consulting the victim, who said she hopes 25 years will be a life sentence for the man. Don't we all, honey? Item 10. A masked police chief planning to surprise a Michigan high school student's forensic science class ended up sparking a brief lockdown after being spotted by a cafeteria worker. Montrose Police Chief Daryl Ellis and another person from the department were seen Thursday putting on stocking masks outside the Montrose High School for a mock robbery. Ellis said the lesson called for students to write descriptions of the suspects and to do interviews. Principal Jim Ply said that about 180 students eating lunch were evacuated to the gym and the school went into lockdown for about 10 minutes. The mock robbery at the school went on as planned. A mock robbery has been part of the class for about 12 years, but this is definitely kind of an oops. I guess the word didn't get out to all the people the word should have gotten out to. Well, that'll about do it for this week's stories. I want to thank Bill Van Loon, Drizilla Gothley, and Sergeant TC, our Copcast correspondents for this week, for contributing the stories that help make this a fantastic show. Next up, this week we have another installment of the Tales from George's Pocketbook, our audio segment from our brother officers across the pond in Great Britain. The Bavarian two-finger nose throw is all very well, but when you're in a scrap where there are no holes barred, George favors the use of his primary assets when it comes to restraining prisoners. Sit back and give old George a listen.
How much longer is your midlife crisis going to last? Because it is really starting to tick me off.
Welcome to another tale from George's Pocketbook. George is a frontline UK response officer dedicated to fighting crime, resolving family disputes in minutes that have taken years to break down, and getting in the faces of the social underclass. All events are real, and names and places have been changed to protect the innocent, not so innocent, and plain stupid.
Years ago, a lot of effort was put into teaching new police officers a variety of holds, grabs, and takedowns. Some of these holds were so complex that a degree in human anatomy was required to implement them, as was a fair degree of luck when trying to apply them to your quarry. George still remembers those late nights in the gym at training school, practicing an array of thumb locks, arm holds, and handcuff takedowns prior to the practical assessments the next day. There's no doubt that some of these skills have proved to be effective during his service, but he still has to suppress a grin when he sees two or three bobbies piled on top of a struggling prisoner. He's not laughing at them, it's just that the reality of restraining someone is to get them on the floor at the earliest opportunity, and to keep the sharp bitey bits from your soft fleshy parts, and he's never had to apply a textbook thumb lock. The most effective way to implement this is to execute a front or rear leg sweep followed by the Kung Fu Panda static restraint method, otherwise described as sitting on the suspect. Once this method of restraint has been applied, the prisoner can be handcuffed, limb strapped, and they will be firmly under no other illusion that they have been detained. There's little room for complex thumb locks in this real world, so much so that someone at the training school has finally realised this, and most of these holds are no longer taught. Recently, George was on duty with a probationer. Sam was a mere slip of a girl, and just 19 years old, but loved to get stuck in. It was late evening, and they were called to a disturbance in the street. Reports were coming in of a male trying to attack vehicles with a tree branch in the middle of the road. Sure enough, upon arrival, they saw a number of cars trying to turn round, and a man screaming at the top of his voice. "I want to ascend," he was shouting, along with threats to kill himself. George and Sam ran over to the man, who had fortunately discarded his hefty tree branch by leaving it on the top of a stationary vehicle, its driver clearly intent on not getting out. George grabbed hold of the man by his collar and started to drag him to the side of the road, as there were far too many moving vehicles in it for his liking. Reasoning with him was not an option. His probationer was trying to force the man's right arm up his back to gain control, but this wasn't working. They eventually dragged him to the side of the police car, where George forced him against the boot. He was shouting at him to calm down, but the man responded by throwing a punch George's way, which he successfully dodged. With size and sanity on his side, George executed a textbook perfect front leg sweep, taking the violent disturbed man to the floor. He struggled and kept shouting to be let go, so that he could ascend to a higher place. The only place to go in George's mind was in a cell or a secure psychiatric assessment unit. The man continued to struggle and then tried to spit at Sam. The only way to deal with this guy was to get his face closer to the pavement, which meant George having to place his full body weight on the thrashing prisoner whilst holding him in a half Nelson. This gave his probationer an opportunity to secure him in limb restraints. A few minutes later, the male, successfully subdued and restrained, was helped into the rear of a caged van that took him to hospital, having been detained under the Mental Health Act. The whole incident had only lasted a few minutes, but both George and his probationer were exhausted. It just goes to show that when it all kicks off, the rules and jiu-jitsu type nose holds firmly go out the window.
Well, I want to thank Kevin and Michael for sending us another great story. Remember, Michael has extended an open invitation to anyone who would like to write a story about their own real-life experiences. You write it, he'll record it, and I'll play it. Pretty simple. On to the training opportunities. This week, I want to let you know that the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's National Cybersecurity Division invite you to join them for the next session of the National Webcast Initiative entitled Our Shared Responsibility, the Strategy for Promoting Cybersecurity Awareness. It'll take place on Thursday, October 8, 2009, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't miss out. Register now for this free webcast. Space is available on a first-come, first-served basis. To register, you need to go online, and I'm going to include the web link in the show notes. Remember that we welcome training or event announcements from any criminal justice agency or training organization. Just send the information to talkback@copcast.net and we'll be happy to announce your upcoming event or training course. Now from their job opportunities. Of course, we always say we're pleased to help criminal justice agencies find and hire the best qualified people. And, you know, I'll continue to relay any job announcements that I receive. However, I'd like to start a new initiative in this slot. Our listeners are employed all over the world for a variety of different agencies. And I'd like to start spotlighting one agency per week. So if you have a moment, just jot down a little information about your agency and shoot it to me at talkback@copcast.net. Things you might want to include are stuff like the size of your agency, the special units, agency accomplishments, and the size of your jurisdiction. You know, you get the picture here. Assume that our listeners know absolutely nothing about your jurisdiction or your agency, so educate us. I want to start this on the next show, so get it to me as soon as you can, and I'll include your agency spotlight and the others in the order that I receive them. I appreciate it. Well, it looks like we've run out of electrons, so we're going to have to shut down this episode of CopCast. But I want to thank you for taking your time to listen to CopCast, and be sure to let your friends and fellow officers know about the show. Also, remember that my Twitter name is CopCast, and you can follow me at twitter.com. You can also catch up with the two girls from Utah and Michael on Cops Online. Shell is Hell's Bunny, Suze is Buckethead, and Michael, my part-time co-host, is Michael. Check them out in the chat room or shoot them an email. And please keep those comments coming. Remember, I can always use some more CopCast correspondence, so if you run across a story from your jurisdiction you think would be interesting and would fit in with CopCast, shoot me a link on it or make a copy and send me a copy. You can send me an email at talkback@copcast.net. Or better yet, if you have a computer and a microphone, send me an audio comment. I'll make you a star in the next show. But most importantly, stay safe out there and always wear your vest. So from the whole crew at CopCast, have a great week.